Blog Talk Radio.
Take me up higher, reach for the top. Higher and higher, don't ever fall stop. Take me up higher, reach for the top.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Juwanza for Life. Thank you so much for tuning in this afternoon. As I always say, you could be doing something else, but you've taken time out of your day to spend the next hour or so with me and my special guest. Got a very exciting show lined up for you today. You are going to be so glad that you tuned in. Got some special guests, and you know that it's Black Music Month. Okay, for those of you who didn't know, yep. It is Black Music Month, and we've got some people on that are going to be discussing Black Music Month, and you're going to really be surprised when you hear who my guests are. I've had the pleasure of interviewing them before, and it was a fabulous interview, and I'm just so excited to have them back. Let me tell you a little bit about them. They are Grammy-nominated artists, producers, and songwriters of Grammy-winning projects. My special guests this afternoon are going to be Helen Bruner and Terry Jones. That's right, Helen Bruner and Terry Jones, and individually and collectively, they've worked on many recording projects as songwriters, producers, and vocalists. Terry Jones has worked on recordings for Grammy winners Celine Dion, Gloria Estevan, and is featured vocalist on the Redman and Method Man platinum seller, How High. Helen Bruner wrote and produced her critically acclaimed album, Have You Heard About It, on the Cardiac Virgin label. Helen Bruner and Terry Jones have reached number one on the Billboard charts, featured on film, TV soundtracks, most notably the blockbuster film The Score, starring Robert De Niro. Their voices can be heard on national commercials, and their songs have been licensed to numerous international compilations. Helen Bruner and Terry Jones wrote, produced, performed, and mixed their R&B soul album, Hollywood. It held the number one spot for five consecutive weeks on the official UK soul charts in 2010. The ladies received the 2013 Linda Creed Shining Star Award as a songwriter's award. And if you all remember, when I had them on a few years ago, they had just done a remake of the Patti LaBelle or the LaBelle song, What Can I Do For You? You remember that? Well, if you didn't know who I was talking about, now you know, because you heard that remake, and everybody that heard that remake was like, wow, that sounds just like the real song. That sounds like Patti and Sarah and Nona. Well, my special guests are here with us today, and I am so happy to welcome them back to Juwanza for Life. Terry and Helen, thank you so much for being my guests again today.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Yes.
Absolutely. We had a little technical difficulty. We're like, are we on the phone yet? But we got to keep it real. We have to keep it
That's
real.
Right.
So it's great to be here. Thank you for having us back.
It's truly an honor. You know, when I found out I was doing this interview, I was so excited and I couldn't wait. I've been sharing the information all day long, and people who heard the advertisements were like, oh my God, oh my God, I hope I can tune in. Those queens are awesome. And they are absolutely right.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Well, again, it is Black Music Month, and let me just first say to my listeners, don't be shy. If you have a question or comment, please just press 1. If you're listening by phone, if you just press 1, it'll let me know that you have a question or you'd like to make your comment. Or if you're listening online, then all you have to do is dial 347-324-5433. 347-324-5727. Again, that's 347-324-5727. Now, again, as I stated, it is Black Music Month. But before we get into discussing Black Music Month and what it is and how it came about, let's give the listeners just a little bit of background on you both, Terry and Helen. Like, what got you started into the music industry? I mean, it's an industry, and it's a big industry, and you all have had a lot of success in this industry. What got you started? You can take your time with it. Whoever
sure,
wants to go
Terry,
first.
You can
what
go
got
first.
You?
Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Well, this is Terry starting off, Jawanza. Just wanted to say, of course, my mom, Linda Jones, a legendary soul singer, we call her the Empress of Soul, passed mm-hmm. when I was a baby, and my family, I grew up in a musical family, and I don't know, it was just something that was in my blood and in whatever, and it was something that I always wanted to do from as far back as I could remember. So, mm-hmm. and pretty much that's what got me started. I stayed consistent with pushing to make sure that that I honed in on my craft, even as a little girl, and then growing up, and really being able to look up to some wonderful legendary artists, such as my mom and the LaBelles and those artists that are really great, great artists and will continue to be artists for as long as we're here and longer. So mm-hmm. and then I moved on and I got a record deal with Atlantic Records as a solo artist. And then Helen and I actually, she had a solo deal as well. Helen, I'm going to let you talk about that. And we actually, you know, started performing and writing and producing together, and it's just been an awesome, awesome journey. This is my mm-hmm. sister, you know. Her mom kind of took me over and took me under her wings, and that's my mom. That was my second mom. So we really, 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 it's better us together than apart, because we really support each other, and we both come with our individual strengths. Mm-hmm. for the duo. So pretty much that's kind of a short overview of how I've pretty much got into this industry, but it's always been something that, that's been near and dear to my heart and just in my blood.
Okay.
I love it.
Wow.
You know, this is Helen here. I started really, my older brother was my inspiration. Anything he did, I wanted to do. And he had a little singing group, and they would sing all the oldies, because they love oldies. Even though he was young, he just loved the oldies. And he challenged me one day to sing some harmony with his group, because he didn't think his little sister could sing. And I knew I could, bashfully, you know. And mm-hmm. And I've always had a deep voice as a little girl. I was, you know, and he said, wouldn't I come and sing in this little baritone? And they were singing I think it was Sitting in the Park, Waiting for You. And he said, come in on this note. And I jumped in, and boy, all his friends just fell out. They fell out on the floor. And then he challenged me to play the piano. He said, I'll learn mm-hmm. how to play the piano. He said, if Mommy buys a piano, I'll learn how to play the piano. And within 1 week, my brother still can't play the piano. Of course, I went on to learn the piano and compose and the whole nine. And then my step-grandfather was the son with the Roberta Martin Singers, and his name was Marcellus McKissick. So him being a great gospel singer, there was always gospel music and every, you know, all this music in the house. So once I knew I could do it, and I loved it, and I saw my mom took me to see Gladys Knight in the Pips. And I didn't want to go. I was like, I don't want to see Gladys Knight in the Pips. They're old. And I go in, and that was it. My life changed, and I wanted everything Gladys Knight and the Pips, you know, and from there it went on to the legacy of soul music. And, you know, I sung in all kinds of bands and, you know, cover bands as a kid. And then I decided I have to stop the cover bands, and I began to compose, and then landed a deal with Cardiac Virgin Records. And released several songs and an album. Got dropped because Janet Jackson wanted $80 million, and they needed to pay her. And about 72 of us, including Layla Hathaway and Brandy and so many more, we were dropped. And then, you know, we got a big ASCAP check, a writer's check saying that, no, you're not a failure. And we decided, Terry and I, to work together. We were totally against it because
yes,
our styles were different. And one day I was flying off to London, and she was she was doing her record, and she said, look, my background vocalists are going to be late. I need you on background vocals. Of course, that's my sister. I said, okay, and the sound was so wonderful that when we both kind of just drifted in different directions and where we were going, it didn't work out. We said, well, we might as well do it together. And that's how Helen Bruner and Terry Jones came together. And, the sound was what we really were looking for all the time, but we just fought up against it. But God has a way of working it all out. And
all
that's
the time.
It. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, what's so interesting, you both, you, Helen, were talking about how when, you know, you heard Gladys Knight and that changed your life. And I know that, Terry, for you, you said that your mom, who was Linda Jones, who has a legacy in her own right, anybody that knows soul music, like you mentioned her, she's considered the Empress of Soul. I know that you had to, with her having been your mom, you had to listen to all of her records, you know? Is that correct? I mean,
absolutely.
So,
you know, because, okay, I'm going to let you finish. I'm sorry.
No, I was just thinking that would have, my thought would have been that you probably listened to a lot of her music, and you know, and I, but let me not assume that. Is that the case or no?
Yes, I mean, it was, of course, it was played in my house from as far back as I could remember, but for me, it was, believe it or not, just growing up, it was very painful for me to listen because, you know, like I said, I was so young when she passed away. And she was only 27, and, of course, we kept her music playing at all times. But because I would see her images on TV, I would, you know, hear her voice on the radio, and just knowing that that was my mom and she wasn't here, it was very painful for me for a number of years until I was strong enough to kind of deal with it. And I was always proud of everything that she did. I always looked at, you know, just her road in this business, and, you know, passing at 27, looked at her road and the people that she was around when I was old enough to get there. She had some people around her that were not so nice, you know, managers and people that kind of took advantage of her for not really just being so trustworthy. And my family, when she passed, my family actually was so distraught that no one really picked the ball up to run and take care of the business. So that was something that was always something that I said, you know what, when I get old enough, I'm going to do it. And if I'm going to be in this business, I'm going to be in it the right way where I understand it, both sides. You know, you can be creative and you can be awesome there, but you have to understand the business as well. So, you know, I took her positive things and carried them with me, and her music lives on forever. And thank God we were able to. Helen and I actually did a project on my mom. Mr. Gamble and Mr. Huff gave us some of the files, and I had some of her vocal things, and we did soul talking, and where we went in and we created new music and put vocals on it and the whole nine, and it received the Grammy nomination for the song Baby I Know. So I was able to kind of reclaim her legacy. And Helen, I always thank her and love her to death because she pushed me to do it, because even then, which was a few years ago, it was still hard to listen. But she said, we're going to do this. And we did it. It was awesome and amazing. And I'm so proud of that and everything else.
Wow, that is something. I mean, again, just listening to you go back and recapture the history, and then I know she would be proud of you, you know, today, seeing you doing your thing, doing it the right way, and being successful, and Grammy nominations, and, you know, the whole nine yards. You mentioned the business aspect of it and how, you know, there's more to this business than just being creative, and a lot of artists have gotten the short end of the stick because they don't know the business side. Could you talk about the importance of knowing the business side? It is, you know, a business, And, you know, there are a lot of people that can sing, but when you're trusting your manager and you're just trusting the record label to, you know, handle your business for you, and you don't know necessarily that you need a lawyer, you know, or a team of lawyers work with you.
Absolutely.
Can you talk about the importance of just knowing the business?
Oh, yeah. I could give you a story. When I first started, you know, we all have these managers who have a little cash. You know, they may own a store, whatever, but they have, they buy a little equipment, and now they're running your whole career because as an artist, you don't have this. So I was about 15 years old. This is Helen, and we went into New York, and my manager brought a gentleman who was an attorney. He, now, mind you, he was a real estate attorney, but he said, okay, we needed a lawyer. He was a Jewish fellow, and so he's a Jewish attorney who is in real estate. And when the record label said to him, listen, we're going to give your artist 7 points, he said, no, you're not. You're not going to give my artist any points. I don't want that at all. How could you do that to my artist? She's young. She's 15. I don't know anything. I leave the meeting. A couple of years passed, and I'm speaking with a fellow musician and artist who's pretty much pretty well established, and they say to me, I said, well, you know, I remember a couple of years ago I had this manager, he took this attorney, and they were going to give me points, and he was like, no way, because if you can get points to get you, he said, they want to give you how many points? I said, 7. They said, oh, my gosh, that's awesome. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, that's how you get paid. The attorney who was a real estate attorney thought that meant points against me, as if points against when you have a license, and they give you points against your license. So he literally walked me out of the deal because at that moment they knew that we didn't know what we were doing, ruined a deal with me with RCA Records. That was my introduction to the music industry. And at that point, I said, never again will anyone handle my career. I will always be the captain of the ship. And I went and purchased every book that I could, in the business of music, and every other book that was out there to learn about this music industry, because it's a business first, and then it's show, the business of show. And as artists, we need to look at ourselves as entities like a Donald Trump and a Steve Jobs and a Rupert Murdoch, because we're the entity. And a lot of artists feel as though, oh, well, I'm creative and somebody else should do that. Believe you me, Donald Trump and Rupert Murdoch and Oprah Winfrey, they know what's going on with their corporations. And they're very creative in a different way. But we need to know that as well, so we can go further. Terry, you want to pick up?
Yeah, and I just want to say that when you hire a manager, they work for you. And that's what a lot of people really don't understand, you know. And, you know, although you may have someone working for you, you still need to understand it, even though you may not administratively do it. But you need to, we all, as we say, who's watching the watcher? Got to watch.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, it's
absolutely
interesting, because as I'm listening to you, I've known people that have, you know, had talent and wanted to sing and, you know, really could sing. And there are, you know, again, you hear the stories of even back when it comes to even a lot of the artists that we know, that we've grown up listening to their music, that how that first deal might have been a deal that, because, you know, you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and, you know, you just want to get into the business, and somebody comes to you with a contract and says, and they might say, okay, well, we're going to give you some points, okay? We're going to give you, and it might not be 7 points, it might be 2, you know? Might be 3 points. Something, and the artist, not knowing, is thinking, okay, and they might say, okay, we're going to even give you an advance, you know, and again, the artist thinking, and especially if they're coming from a background where they're not used to having anything, not having any money, this advance seems like a lot of money. So what would be, if 7 was good, if 7 was like a good deal, what should an artist not take any less than? I mean, is there a figure, a point number that you should just not go below?
Well, you know what? Depending on the deal, because you have a lot of things. Now, today, there's something called the 360 deal. I ended up getting 11 points, which was fair for a new artist. When I signed, our deals were different. I signed directly to the label. Terry signed through a production company through the label. So her first experience was different from mine, where she received 50% of whatever the person received, if any. So that's always the case. But now there's something called the 360 deal, meaning that the record label will take a piece of everything, where years ago when we signed, the only thing they received was a piece of your sales. And if you were a songwriter, there was something called cross-collateralization. And what that would mean, there's a statutory rate. A statutory rate is what all writers in the U.S. are paid. So it's 9.1 cent, everybody, from, you know, Beyonce to the person on the corner if they just wrote a song. It doesn't matter. So everyone,
not to interrupt you, per sale, 9.1 cent per sale.
Per sale. So no matter what, you get 9.1 cents. What the record company would do is kind of penalize you for being more talented. So if you were an artist that can write, they would say, well, we're not going to pay you the 9.1 cent. We're going to pay you 7.5 cents because, you know, we're just not going to do that, which is terrible, which is absolutely terrible. Now, also, let me get back to the 360 deal. Years ago, that's all they took. They took your royalty, your physical royalty, meaning every time there's a sale, they take the percentage. And if you're a songwriter, they take a piece of that. They lower your percentage as an artist. Okay, nowadays, they want your merchandise. If you sell whatever, they want a piece of your touring. They want publishing, and they want the sales, because there really aren't as many sales as it used to be, unless they put out a whole lot of money. So before, if you're an artist and you're signed to a record label, and say you have a falling out with the A&R, or there's a new A&R that comes into place, and that's Artist and Repertoire. That's who signs you to, for the public. That's who signs an artist, a record company. You could at least work. You could go out and get gigs and get tours, and don't worry. Because once the record label loses interest in you as an artist, you could go out and you can work. But today, if you sign a 360 degree deal, you can't. They control all of it. So now you can't go out and say to a Live Nation or a booker and say, listen, can you book me? They have to go to your record company, and they have to deal with that. And so now they're still getting a piece of your money on all fronts. And if you do a commercial, say they drop you, but your deal is still in place, they can still get a piece of that Pepsi deal. They can get a piece of everything now, where before it was just the sales of the record. So
what are the durations of the contract? Is it years, or
it
is it like a certain amount of or a certain amount of CDs? Okay, you owe us, you know, three albums, or you know, how does
exactly
that work?
Normally the deal is seven albums.
Seven.
Okay. It depends on, now some deals are a licensing deal, where a lot of the artists today, because there's you could do it right out of your Pro Tools studio at home, everybody's, you know, programming. So some deals are licensing deals, where you loan the label your music and they promote it and you get a higher percentage. But normally, now in the state of California, you're not allowed to hold anybody past 7 years, and I believe it's the Tina Marie law, because Motown held her forever. Yeah. And so you're not allowed to do that, and normally you're supposed to push out an album every so many years, but a lot of artists take time. So they try to put a hold on that and not to go for so many years. Go ahead, Terry.
And the one thing about just being an artist, too, you have to remember everything is recoupable, meaning if the marketing person is going out and they have to take 20 people out to dinner, that's coming out of your budget. That limo that they're sending to pick you up, to take you to New York or wherever, that's coming out. That's recoupable.
Right.
Everything,
all the videos.
All the videos. Everything is
clothes,
recoupable.
Clothes, rented, everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whatever they spend, they're going to get that back first before you make one dime as an artist.
Yes. And this is the only industry that when you pay off your debt, you don't own your product. Meaning when you pay off your mortgage to your home, you own it. You get the deed. When you buy your car and it's paid off, you get your title. When you pay off your whatever the budget was, your budget, your promotion budget, marketing budget, and your recording budget, once you pay that off, the record company still owns your music, the actual sound recording, for 35 years.
Well, what about publishing? What about publishing?
Publishing is something different.
Okay, that's something different. Okay.
This is something that a lot of artists don't know. They say, "Oh, I just wrote a song, but I don't have a publisher." Yes, you do. You wrote it. You created it. You are the publisher.
Owner.
You just have to establish a company that is, let's just say, you know, Blog Talk Radio Publishing, let's just say hypothetically, Blog Talk Radio Publishing. So this way when the checks come from your PRO, your performance rights companies, when
which
the checks come,
check of BMI. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, you'll be able to cash it. It's just the law in the United States. You'll be able to cash it doing business as Blog Talk Radio Publishing. So they'll send you the money and then you cash it. Now, you can use your publishing as a bartering chip where you can do a publishing deal where it's direct, where they get 50% of whatever you make by them putting money into you for recording, flying you around, getting your music in front of music supervisors for TV, film, commercials, all those things in front of artists. Or you can do an administrative deal where they handle all your paperwork, they get a lower percentage, maybe 15 to 20%, and they clear everything for you. You can use that as a bartering chip. And a lot of artists who are songwriters as well, they'll sign, when they're signed to a major label, all the major publishers want them. And what they'll do, they'll kick in money to help promote the music.
You know, this is
it.
It said a lot.
I mean, it is a lot. And I mean, and when you think about today, you know, with the onset of streaming, you know, of course, music, you can download anything for free off of YouTube. The songwriter is dying because they're not getting paid because there's no royalties. The artists, basically, the only way they're going to make any money off of what they love to do is touring, performing at clubs, selling a CD, selling a T-shirt or a hat or some sort of something, a pen or whatever.
Or if they're blessed enough to sell a million copies.
And that's an oddity today. And I don't think it's so much because people don't buy music. I think music is not touching the soul of people where they wish to buy the music. That's the problem because they're not souls creating it. It's a computer mimicking what you put into it.
The live
That's
a
whole nother radio show.
Yeah, it is. Because that live element, you can't touch that. You know, that's like Helen said, that comes from the soul. When you get, you know, the live musicians with the live vocalists and all of that, I'm telling you, you can't touch that. When you're working out of a box and you're, you know, programming, you know, it's two different sounds, two different things. And this is why the great artists like the Stevie Wonder and the LaBelles and all those, that was real. That wasn't out of a box. This is why it's still living on forever, and it's a part of the American songbook forever. So we have to get back to that.
But it's expensive.
You know what's amazing
easier.
Is how you can just tell how music – I'm sorry. You can just tell how music has changed over the years because now you can hear a concert and then there'll be a controversy after the concert saying, you know, oh, so-and-so was lip-singing. Lip-singing, you know.
And there's something called auto-tune.
People going to hear live shows.
Auto-tune and melody.
The auto-tune.
Mm. Auto-tune is where it sounds like a little computer kind of sound. And then Melodyne is something that it will put anyone on pitch. Anyone. So there's many artists, and we will not give their names, who will sing the song completely out of pitch. They will put it on pitch, come out, and sell millions. And then
that's
when
right.
it's time to tour, they have the Melodyne programmed into the computer. And that's why nobody will sing a cappella. And don't let the computer fail, and you have to just sing with just, it's a rap.
Yeah, it is. And what's happening is if they're being corrected by a machine, how do you expect to hone in on your craft to ever know when you're right and when you're wrong? Because you're always being corrected. And that's what's happening with most of the artists.
Well, let me let the listeners, if you want, just to give you a chance, if you want to ask a question, you want to speak to my guest, all you have to do is press 1, and I'll bring you on board, and you can make your comment or ask your question. We're talking with Terry Jones and Helen Bruner, and we got a lot of ground to cover because, again, as I stated, this is Black Music Month. In case you didn't know there was a Black Music Month, there is a Black Music Month, and we're in it. And let's talk about that for a moment. Black Music Month. How did that get started, and you know, and when, and why?
Well,
was that was,
it? I'll tell you this. It started with Mr. Gamble and Huff, and there's an article that will be coming out in Billboard that will be done by our new here in Philadelphia, our new president of the Recording Academy Philadelphia chapter. Miss Deanna Williams.
Yes.
And it started, I'm just going to paraphrase, back in the 70s. It really was started behind economics because Black music, there were no Black music departments back then. Black music wasn't recognized as lucrative. It was in its own little space, and Mr. Gamble and several others got together called Clarence Avant, who is the godfather of R&B as far as making things happen on the business side of things, and said, listen, we've got to bring people together because we have to establish a month, just like the Country Music Association has a month, which is October, which is Country Music Month. And we need to establish a corporation or some type of association. So, of course, they started the Black Music Association. And it was all of the record executives across the country, you know, Al Bell, Mr. Berry Gordy, and, I mean, everybody got together and said, listen, we have got to make the United States music industry respect our culture, and we also have economically valuable. And in order to do this, we need to develop a month the way the country music. Let's pattern it behind that. You know, why not? Mm-hmm. It's a good model. And lo and behold, Black Music Month was born, but it wasn't on the books yet.
Right.
Okay.
And meaning it wasn't, you know, a proclamation.
As
it wasn't
yet.
Official
yeah.
as of yet. And then Senator Chaka Fatai, at the time, I think he was a congressman at the time, and Mr. Gamble and Ms. Deanna Williams and all of them got together and got
Bill Clinton to sign
off on it. But prior to that, the first meeting, the first time it was recognized was with the administration of Jimmy Carter.
Mm-hmm.
President Jimmy Carter. And they had a big event. I think Stevie Wonder performed, and there was this big hoopla, but it really wasn't established. And then they went back, Chaka Fatai and Miss Deanna Williams, and they got President Clinton to sign it into law. And that's why we have Black Music Month today.
Yep.
And that's a brief a brief story on it, but it's going to be an article that's going to come out, and it'll be way more in-depth in Billboard magazine in the next coming weeks. So, you know, during the month of June for Black Music Month. But it was really established so we could really glorify the economic value of Black music and how many people do not know, but Black music is the largest export of any commodity out of the United States.
Really?
It's not oil. It's not rice. It's not no. It's Black music.
Yeah,
isn't that something?
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are an amazing, and it's Black American music. See, it's a difference.
Yeah.
It is a big difference. And, of course, you know, it's something different that we've all been sprinkled with, even though our culture and our heritage is originally from Africa, but our trials and tribulations and the things that we've, you know, come upon really is put into our music, and our souls are in our music, soul music. And that, when you go anywhere in the world, we are respected as a culture.
Mm-hmm.
And Terry and I have traveled from Japan to Italy to
Germany,
Switzerland,
to
Germany, and I can go on and on and on, the UK. And as soon as they know that we are African American and we do music, it's like we are queens. It is
That's
amazing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, and
you
to
know,
say all of that, we have to respect it.
Mm-hmm.
We all have to respect it. So
and hold our culture.
Listening, yes, hold our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Really respect it.
Yes. And that's another reason why it was established, to make sure that we keep, you know, we don't mind people emulating us. That's fine, because that's flattery. But don't let us disappear from what we have created.
Yeah.
Jazz,
it's
gospel,
fast food.
Blues.
It's fast
mm-hmm.
food to a lot of people, you know, unfortunately. And they have to understand, you know, the people that came before them and before us, what they sacrificed to be able to leave us with the legacy of music that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to continue that
mm-hmm.
in order for us to sustain, you know, what we've created. Like Helen said, with jazz and blues and
rock and
reggae.
Roll. And
yeah.
I mean, you know, hip-hop. I mean, my gosh, you know, a lot of the old heads, they don't like it, but we created it, and we need to own it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We need to own it. And it is a culture. It is a phenomenon. The same way R&B. It's the same thing. It's a culture. It's a phenomenon. And we have to let people know that we created it. We are. It came from us, because it's beginning to disappear. Jazz, blues, come on. You know, we are losing. We've lost many of our legends, and we're losing them every day, and there aren't many more being created because of the state of the industry. So
mm-hmm.
there's a whole sector. Once the radio was consolidated and, you know, the restrictions were lifted, and now you have conglomerates owning all the stations, there are no more regional records. All these people, there would be no Stevie, no Aretha, no
yep.
Earth, Wind & Fire, no,
mm-hmm.
I mean, no Miles Davis, no Billie Holiday if it was today.
That's right.
You just to go back to the business side, if your record does not break, and when I mean break, that means does not make it to the radio and get some sort of buzz on it within 16 weeks, you are dropped.
Dropped. Yep.
Especially
from the label.
Black artists. Dropped
mm-hmm.
from the label. There would be no Aretha Franklin. You know how many records Aretha Franklin did before she got her first hit? She was called the Radio Queen. All she did was radio records. That was it. They didn't sell at all. You know, Stevie Wonder. I mean, it would be
mm-hmm.
no. There would be not one artist that you know that is a legend would have survived this industry the way it is today. Not one. Because
mm-hmm.
none of them were, first time they put the record out, it was a hit. Not one. Today, if you don't get it in the first 16 weeks, it's
You're
a wrap.
Dropped.
You know, it would behoove then.
Not to sound down about it, but we have to make a change, really. What we're saying is,
it would behoove artists
we have to
really start writing then, start writing their own music. Because, you know, when you mentioned that, the thought, the song that came to my mind was I Will Always Love You, written,
mm-hmm.
I believe it was by Dolly Parton, but made famous by Whitney Houston, you
Correct.
Know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if... Now, of course, Dolly was established, okay? She was an established
yeah.
artist or whatever. But that particular song, she didn't really make it famous. Is that correct? I mean, Whitney
yeah,
actually
no, she,
made
well,
that.
It was famous in the country music circle.
Yeah.
Which
not
it,
in the
and, ba- and back then, country music wasn't pop. Today, country music is pop music, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've changed a lot. But people from who were Dolly Parton fans and knew country music, they knew that song. It was one of her biggest records. But we didn't
okay.
know it because it wasn't played on pop radio or black radio.
Black radio.
At that time.
You know, let's go back
mm-hmm.
for a moment to you were talking about the export, the black music being the number one export. And it makes sense what you're saying because, you know, I have friends, again, who were musicians and are musicians, and a couple of them ended up playing, I mean, for a long time, and it shocked me, and it probably won't shock you. I mean, playing R&B music, playing at a club in Ethiopia.
Oh, yeah.
And I
absolutely.
Was like, what?
And it's still happening. It's still happening today. I'm going to tell
mm-hmm.
you. I mean, even when, like Helen said, we've traveled all over. We spent a lot of time in, you know, Italy. We have partners over there that we work with. They love us. They love our music. They love what we bring. And they've even, we've even had some of them walk up to us on the street and say, why do you do that to your music? Why do you mess it up? Why is it not like the great Aretha Franklin, you know, whatever, because they're hearing certain things that's coming from here that they don't value as music at that level. So we have
mm-hmm.
to really be careful about what we put out. We have to be careful about the lyrical content, and we
mm-hmm.
have to be careful about making sure that we're honing in on our craft so that when we go overseas and we go to perform, we can do it. You know, it's not
mm-hmm.
they're not going to have auto-tune probably or be technically savvy as they are here. Some of the venues over there may not be. Then what are you going to do? So it's super
mm-hmm.
important to make sure that, you know, it's a global economy now. Where before, you know, people could just be here and that's it. But you have people that go overseas, and that's all they're doing. They're big stars over there. They come here, they can't get a clap. Something's wrong with that picture, especially when you're talking about talented artists and songwriters and producers.
Yeah, we tend to throw away our culture because we're consistently
mm-hmm.
creating something new. But you can create something new, but you still got to love that old jacket. You know what I mean? It still has to feel good. You know, you still got to put that on and still feel warm and cozy in it. And we tend to throw it away. So,
mm-hmm.
and other cultures, they don't throw away their music. They don't
no.
throw away anything that they've created. They don't say, oh, that's old. Uh-uh.
I actually had a phone call with someone in the U.K., last year, and I was working on some royalty things that they were, you know, trying to resolve an issue that I had with one of their companies over there. And they said,
mm-hmm.
you know, they said, you know, you used to be, as far as
the American,
African-American music,
mm-hmm.
used to be the leaders. Now we're the leaders. You follow us.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Really?
And it's true. I mean, you have all of our artists going over to work with Sam Smith and not being a
mm-hmm.
hater at all. We commend anybody who has success. That's who we are. But you're running, Mary J. Blige is running to work with Sam, who's mimicking Al Green. And
yeah.
It's like, hello? You have tons mm-hmm. and tons and tons and tons of songwriters and musicians that can do, you know, he's doing us. So why,
mm-hmm.
you know, but this is, but it's not per se Mary as much as it is the powers that be are saying,
mm-hmm.
look, you go over there and you
go
work
there.
With him because he's the hottest thing that's happening right now. Mm-hmm. You know, and Sam will tell you, listen, I love Black American music. That's what
mm-hmm.
I study. That's what I listen
yeah.
to. That's what I'm trying to emulate. And, you know.
But he can get the title of soul
mm-hmm.
when they will not put that on our artist.
No. Maxwell will not be soul.
Yeah.
Anybody
no.
younger than 70, they will not put soul music on. They won't do
hmm.
it.
As a title.
They won't call Jill Scott a soul singer.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got a question for you, and that's this, because it's not uncommon nowadays to hear of somebody in the industry who we would think sold millions of records, and you find out that this person's gone bankrupt, or you find out this person owes taxes, or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I know stuff happens to everybody, and, you know, if you're, again, young and you don't know anything about the business side, but who's responsible? Well, ultimately, I'm sure it's the artist's responsibility. I mean, it's your life, it's your music, it's your career to make sure that you're paying your taxes and you're, you know, handling the business side of it, but would that fall under the manager's heading? I mean, or is the manager just the person that's like, I can get you the record deal, you know?
Well,
but, I mean, somebody's
the
manager,
it's a team.
Yeah.
You have a team
mm-hmm.
behind you. And it depends on the artist. Some
mm-hmm.
artists listen. here you are, you've always been poor, and someone deposits $1 million in your account. You don't know what to do with it. The first thing someone says, you have to get an accountant. Some of them don't know, what is that? Look, they'll handle your money for you. Now you have someone who is now power attorney over your money. Now, who is to say that this person is an honest person? Some people are, some people aren't. A lot of artists, because they're new, they're young, and their monies go to their attorney. It's in their attorney's name, and then their attorney cashes their check and then takes their percentage and then sends them the money. Some artists, they don't know taxes. You know, a lot of their people, they're raised on hardworking families who the taxes are taken out. And normally what you do, you submit your taxes through H&R Block or whatever, and then the government pays you back. So you mean I have to pay the government? You know what I mean? And they don't understand that you're getting all the money. You you know, 30% of that has to go back to the government unless you write it off. So now this, and the average city, they, unless it's L.A. or New York, you go to a tax person and tell them you are a self-employed entertainer, they're looking at you like, I don't know what to do with this.
They don't understand it,
They're used to a 9-to-5er coming in and they're doing the taxes. You know what I mean? So they don't understand it. So this person gets all tripped up. They don't real. Then a lot of times you have managers who forget, oh, yeah, you did get $50,000 for that. Oh, yeah, so-and-so. Now you're getting all these 1099s, which you receive instead of you would get a 1040 if you're a 9-to-5 person, you know, and you have a job like that. But as a self-employed, you get a 1099. So everything comes to you. So that company, that say that promoter who paid you $5 million for the tour, sends that to the government. That I paid them $5 million, then the government comes knocking and says, okay, where's my 30% the following year? Now, that person has bought 5 homes for their mother, the aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters. They got 20 cars. They've been traveling. Next thing you know, uh-oh.
That's right. That's why we said, who's watching the watcher? You have to have people in your corner, especially when you're dealing with that kind of money, that understand it, and you have someone that you trust to write your checks. Even if you hire an accountant, get somebody else that you trust. You sign off on your checks so you understand what's going on here. And to me, that's the best way to do it because, you know, accountants, like Helen said, not that we're saying they're dishonest, they're not, but you have to have someone that really understands the music business because if they don't, you can really get messed up.
Yeah, so that, it's sad. And that's, I think,
you know, I was reading
the 101 school.
You're right. You're right about that. You know, I was reading recently over the last few months, probably within the last 3 or 4 months, and you're probably familiar with it. Sly Stone supposedly just won a big lawsuit over royalties that were owed to him. I think they settled. He won $5 million. Now I don't know how much of the how much the lawyers might get a third of that. I don't know, but he just supposedly won $5 million in, you know, back royalties or whatever. And I was like, wow, he had somebody fighting for him because I'm sure that through the years, I mean, a lot of times people get, you know, stuff gets confused, stuff gets lost. George Clinton is still fighting, you know, to get money back,
to get his
money owed to him.
Because you have these managers and you know what they do? They take ownership. Back then, the artists didn't know. The money's coming so fast. It's a business. They don't understand. It's when you have, you love, there's been many times Terry and I, in the beginning of our careers, we've done a show and forgot to get the
to get paid the
check. We really did.
Because we love what we do.
We
you
love
know?
What we do. And you know, and then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, wait a minute. You know, today, of course, we would never do that. But I'm just saying, there was a time where we saw it all as, oh, my God, somebody's going to pay us to do something that we love. So there's a lot of, you know, things that come to play. And then you trust people. We're very trusting a lot of times. And you think, they would never do that to me. Well, let me tell you, when you put tens of millions of dollars in front of someone's face, you know, and then you got to deal with drugs, alcohol. A lot of these artists are high. Back
mm-hmm.
then, they were doing all sorts of things. They didn't know that was the 60s. They're having fun,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yep.
and they trust this guy over here or that girl over there. So, and you know what they did? Signed all of, they said, don't worry about it. You handle it. Okay, I'll handle it. I'll take care of you. And they signed all the rights. Who knew that one day that their faces would be worth so much on a T-shirt? Who knew?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so you got to prepare for the future.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about for a moment the both of you and your careers as artists. Just let's talk about the rush for a second. And when I say the rush, I mean the rush that you get when you're singing and after you hit the last note, you hear the applause. I'm familiar with that rush on a much smaller scale. I had a friend of mine one time who was singing in open mics in the D.C. area, and I was shocked.
Mm-hmm.
I was over his house, and he was getting ready to go perform, and I was like, you getting ready to go where? He was like going down to this club called Mr. Henry's. That's where actually Roberta Flack was discovered. And he was like, I'm going down to Mr. Henry's to sing. And I was like, you get up in front of people and sing? He was like, yeah, he said, you could do it. And I was like, man, I could never get up in front of nobody and sing. And he said, yeah, come on with me, right? So I went down, and he said, you're going to experience two things. You're going to hear other people that they're going to sound so bad that you're going to want to run up and take the mic out of their hand and start singing the song. Or you're going to hear somebody that sounds so good that you're not going to want anywhere near the mic. And so I actually went up. I tried my hand at it and, you know, sung a few songs, and people actually clapped, and I was like, whoa.
Oh, okay.
Down there every Tuesday and Wednesday, you know, because of the rush, you know, that feeling of having somebody applaud you. Can you talk about the rush? I mean, that exhilarating feeling that you get after you've hit that last note and people are standing on their feet, you know, giving you applause and, you know, all of that, because that can be addicting. I mean, it was for me because I was down there every day, almost every day. Every time they opened up, I was down there trying to get that feeling.
Wow.
Again.
Go ahead, Tim. You want to go first? Go ahead.
Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I just, you know what, it's really hard for me to explain it. I mean, you explained it, but I get it all throughout the song, and especially when I have great musicians and great vocalists on stage, a support on stage doing it, it is just, it takes it to a level that I can't even explain. You know, and we're one, Helen and I both are the type of artists that we love for the people that's with us. We want them to enjoy what they're doing too. You have some artists that's like, no, don't move, don't whatever. No, we're like, uh-uh. We're all going to move because guess what? God gave us a gift to do this. We love it. And like you said, that rush is like no, unlike no other. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I just love it. I don't even know what to say. And you know what? Even before the applause come, I want people to enjoy it, like you said, throughout the song or throughout the set. You know, we bring people up on stage because we want the people in the audience to dance or sing or do whatever with us. That's what is so awesome about just being in front of a crowd and just, you know, giving your gift to the world.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, when we are writing a song, we're thinking about how people will receive it. You know, will they understand what we're doing? We're the type of singers that when we perform, we sing for you, not for us. You see, we want to touch you in a way that chord, there's something called a love chord, an angry chord, a just getting ready chord. You know, we want you to feel what we're feeling. And it's really, for me, I can say, and I know Terry will agree, it's us giving you a piece of us. It's giving somebody.
Mm-hmm.
It's like going and feeding the homeless, you know, and the reward that you get from that, that, you know, it's us giving our souls, giving, we feel like we're ministering, you know what I mean, to you something, you know what I mean? We're giving you something to make your soul feel good, and we're helping humankind. And seeing the smiles on the faces is just, oh, my gosh. And the applause is the reward.
Yes.
You know, and we are walking on cloud 92. You know
okay.
what I mean?
Yes.
That's
let me finish it because it's like,
mm-hmm.
yes, you
yeah.
got it. You know, you got it. And the, when mm-hmm. we first come on stage, we look for that one, that face, that person that we know you feeling us right now. And then we
mm-hmm.
watch how the interplay between us and our audience, it begins to spread like wildfire,
mm-hmm.
you know. And that feeling is like no other.
Like no other, right. Like no other.
It really
it's
is. And,
incredible.
And it's an incredible feeling. And if tomorrow the United States said, I'm sorry, but you as an artist, as a songwriter, as a producer, and a publisher, you will only make this amount of money per year, that's it, that's what it is, do you still want to do it? I say, yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. Because
that's the
love.
That's the love.
And we feel like we're giving love. We're spreading love, really.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no greater. There's no. It's like your child. You give. You know, when you see your child being born, and you see that face, and you see that, it's like instant love. It's just pure. That's what
mm-hmm.
we give.
Mm-hmm.
It's
well,
different for everybody. I feel you on that. That applause, though.
Mm-hmm.
That applause really showed you when you got up on the stage. You wanted that. Hey. I have people are enjoying what it is that I'm giving because you open yourself up without
mm-hmm.
even knowing that, hey, oh, wow.
And it's very, you're very
and you know what?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You never know who's listening and how it's affecting them because I'll share a story with you. I was sharing with a coworker because, you know, I was working during the day and I'd go down to the club at night and do the open mic thing, and I was sharing sharing that with a coworker that, you know,
mm-hmm.
I had sung, you know, the night before at
mm-hmm.
a club. Didn't believe
mm-hmm.
me. You know, we were walking down the street. I was sharing it with him. I was like, yeah, it went okay. You know what I mean? He didn't believe me. He's like, man, stop lying. You ain't get up in front of nobody and sing. Just then, we're walking down the street, right? Just then, a car pulled up across the street. A dude jumped out of the car, was pointing at me, talking to his girlfriend in the car, talking about, baby, that's him. That's the dude right there. He was
okay.
down at the club last
wow.
night.
Okay, you touched
so
him.
You touched somebody.
You know?
Yeah. Yes, that's what it's about. You touch
my friend.
That.
He was sitting there like, I believe you now, you know. And you know what I mean?
Yes,
that was just something that could not have been. And you know, and you know, it was just one of those things. I had no idea that he would even remember me, much less to stop the
mm-hmm.
car in the street. You know what I mean? And tell
mm-hmm.
his girlfriend. You know, so yeah, I can definitely relate to. And, of course, I was doing
mm-hmm.
it for free. I wasn't getting paid. It was just the love of the, you
right.
know, something
that's
to do.
That's all right. That's all right.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
what I got
it's
a
all
question.
About. You know, it's love.
I got another question for you. I know, can you have a few minutes you can go a little over?
Let me see. What time is it now? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I had this dream many, many years ago. And in this dream, I was given a song. It was a country song. It was, I got the hook,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've got the, actually got the hook and the first verse. They've been working on the second verse for years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But now, of course, you know, I don't consider myself a country singer. I wouldn't want to even sing the song myself. I would want to give it to somebody to sing
mm-hmm.
and, you know, get royalties or whatever. But
mm-hmm.
as somebody in my particular shoes, I don't have an album of songs or a CD of songs. I got one song, and I think it would
mm-hmm.
be a smash.
Mm-hmm.
And how
mm-hmm.
do you go
mm-hmm.
about that into the hands of somebody who you feel could sing it?
Okay, well, first of all, you need to copyright it.
Yeah.
That's first
you
got to
protect
foremost.
It first.
You
got to
protect
your intellectual property.
Right, and even if you sing it into a, you need to record it some kind of way before you even take it to someone else. And since you've been doing these open mics, you can sing. So you can
right,
get it down
the,
enough.
Melody.
You got
mm-hmm.
the melody
mm-hmm.
and the lyrics, so you should copyright it first. You know what I mean? So that's something you could do right online. It's very simple. You just go to the Library of Congress.gov, and it's very simple. You do a standard form. It would be a PA form, okay?
Even
not
if I don't
SR,
have the second verse.
SR is sound recording. Sound hmm?
Even if I
what
don't have
say?
The second verse. I just got the book and the first verse.
You sing that melody. And you
mm-hmm.
copyright that song. Now, if you think that you want to write with a co-writer, and you're going to come
wait.
Up, then you should wait. to copyright it, because you may bring in a co-writer to write the second verse, and now it should
different.
Be ownership of for the two of you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you may want to wait on that, but I would say,
or you may want to complete the song and then sing it, copyright it, and then you can go and
mm-hmm.
take it and,
mm-hmm.
and work with someone on it, because you've already done the work. It's already done.
It's already done. So you may need a producer, but I would say find the artist who could you know convey the song. If you don't feel you can do it, somebody close, you know, that has a generic sound that is not so, you know, distinctive that they would put their own sound on it, because a lot of artists, they don't like that. They want to hear something that's generic where they can put their own twist to it. The open
mm-hmm.
mics that you're going to, that's a great place to find a singer,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
I would say you pay that singer to do the demo, and you make sure you do a work-for-hire
agreement. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need to say to that particular person, I'm not trying to give you legal advice because I don't want to get sued later, but in any case, you need to find an attorney
mm-hmm.
who will put together a work-for-hire agreement where that basically what it will say, but it will say it in legal jargon, and it will say,
mm-hmm.
I paid you to sing this song. I'm paying you XYZ money. After you leave, this is my song. I own it. All you did was give your performance. They sign it this way, because there's many songwriters and producers who don't know, and they will eventually give that song away, and then this artist will come back and state that, no, they have my style, they stole it, I got a piece of that, I should get this, and the next thing you're going to court for nothing. And even though you will win, but you've just spent $100,000 on legal fees.
Now, Jawanza, is this a song that you want to cut the demo on, or is this a song that you prefer to place with someone else?
Well, I'd like to give it to actually a hot country singer because, you know,
okay.
I think that they would, you know, do it justice, you know, because I don't
mm-hmm.
sing country or, you know, anything like
right.
that.
Right,
but,
right. And
mm-hmm.
you should really go to a club, an open mic that deals with country music, and they're all, especially in Alexandria. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And just Google it. And you
mm-hmm.
go there and you listen and you find that singer, and then you need to find even if they're a guitar player, because a lot of things, you know, it's based on guitar with country
mm-hmm.
music. And a lot of them are songwriters, but say, listen, you may want them to go in with you as a co-writer, but kind of feel them out. You know, your soul will tell you if it's somebody you want to do business with, because you got to be real careful. But then from there, you copyright the song, you demo it,
and then you can shop it.
Then you begin to shop the record. And there's so many country. You need to be in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many country conferences. Songwriter conferences
yes.
in Nashville. Nashville is not that expensive to fly into. A couple of days of hotels means nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And you
but,
go.
But it's best,
and
it's best to go. Yeah, best. It's always best to have it completed and finished enough so that they can hear through it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You want to make sure you have it at a level that when you play it, it's going to compete with whatever else is there.
Yeah, because remember, not only are you pitching that song, you have professional mainstream writers and producers who are pitching to that artist as well. And if their song may not be as good as your song, but they have a slicker production,
uh-huh.
you will lose.
Well, you know what's interesting
so,
is that I don't even like country music. You know, I don't even know why I
yeah,
got the dream.
It came to you. It came to you.
That's it.
But
you
know,
can't
you can
fight up against it.
Yeah. And I mean, and listen, what you need to do is, I know you may not want to, but you need to turn on a country music station. And you need
mm-hmm.
to listen to what's going on today. And you
mm-hmm.
need to put that sort of treatment on that record, because country is not, you know, and I mean, it's, that's over. Over.
Mm-hmm.
You need to listen to like Florida, Georgia Line,
mm-hmm.
Luke Bryan. You need
mm-hmm.
to listen to all these new artists and what they're bringing to the table, because
mm-hmm.
it's a different country than it was years ago.
Because that's what
mm-hmm.
the labels are going to be looking for.
Mm-hmm. They don't want, you know, back in the day, you
mm-hmm.
know, Dolly Parton, the Partridge Singers or whatever they were called. I don't remember it was a male
group.
unless they're recording something that they're actually want that kind of treatment as an artist from back then, mm-hmm. and that's who you want to pitch it to, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they're looking for something, and it's, and I'm going to tell you, labels are so youth-driven, it's just ridiculous. I'm telling you. Everybody would have been old back in the day to get a deal today. Everybody would have been, oh, no, we don't want them. So you got to really look, listen to the radio. And anybody out there that's listening, if you want to write something or you think you have songs or whatever, listen to your competition. Listen, play, if you record something, play their song and then play your song. If your song is not up to speed as far as the levels, the production, mm-hmm. is not close to what your favorite artist or producer or
songwriter, keep working on it
because you are competing with the professionals when you begin to put your product out.
That's right.
So if, let's say, after all of that's done, you know, I get the record with a country singer. Now, it's just a single, okay? Now, and they say, yeah, we'd like to put this on the album. Now, back mm-hmm. to points mm-hmm. and all of that. Now,
well, you don't
I should
worry
be getting...
about points.
No.
You're a songwriter. You're a publisher.
You get that.
Okay.
You get your songwriter.
Right. You get mm-hmm. your 9.1
okay.
cent per sale. And from you as a songwriter and a publisher, because you're going to get, mm-hmm. let's say it's like 100% pie, so you get 50% of each pie. The publisher gets mm-hmm. half, the songwriters get half. As you have more publishers, the splits become even. More mm-hmm. songwriters is even. The publishers get the exact same thing the songwriters get. It's the exact same mm-hmm. pie. So now, then you would have to also look at your performance rights companies, ASCAP, BMI, CSAC. To see which one mm-hmm. you want to go with. It's really up to you. They all pay the same mm-hmm. amount. They pay at different times. Some pay every 30 days. Some pay every quarterly. It's up to you. What you do is you look at them, you visit them, you talk to the people, see who you like,
mm-hmm.
because it's about personality.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, let
then
me ask
you're
you this, because I remember a few years back, it was over 10 years ago, mm-hmm. Berry Gordy sold Motown. I think it was like mm-hmm. for, and you might know the figures, but correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was like for $300 million
mm-hmm.
or something. But he kept the mm-hmm. publishing, mm-hmm. from my understanding.
Yeah,
he kept
of course,
because
publishing is king.
That's right.
So
publishing
then
goes on forever.
Okay. So my question is then, well, what was left? If he kept the publishing, the company, what was left? I mean, you know what I mean? What was left
the
that
masters.
Somebody would pay?
All of the masters.
Okay, okay.
The master. They can exploit that music still.
Mm-hmm. So when they remake and re-put out and reissue Temptations, Jackson 5, Diana Ross Supremes, I keep going on and on and on, Stevie
they
Wonder, they get money from that.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets
mm-hmm.
a piece of, and his publishing goes, because he knew that this is a new game. He's older. He's not feel like competing. And in the meantime, he still gets a piece. He's on,
right.
you know what I mean? He still gets a little piece of it. So they're really, what he did was he sold the brand and the masters, but he kept mm-hmm. all the publishing. So what that means, you got to realize a song can be recorded millions of times
mm-hmm.
by
from someone
mm-hmm.
else, another
by,
artist,
right,
another artist.
By another artist. It becomes a new master. So if I'm going, if tomorrow me and Terry says, okay, we're going to re-record Got to Be There by the Jackson 5 mm-hmm. the way Chaka Khan did, we're going to re-record that. This, it's a new master. Universal doesn't own it. But guess
yeah.
who we have to go get clearance from?
The public.
Joe Bett
Berry.
Music, which is
mm-hmm.
Berry Gordy.
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
see what I mean? And then if 50 other artists want to redo it, it's a brand new master. They only
mm-hmm.
own the masters that were recorded that Motown paid for.
Okay.
You see what I mean? Our company, Filerzi Productions, will own the new master, the sound recording, but the song is owned by Joe Bett. So Joe Bett would pay, they would get 50% of whatever,
mm-hmm.
and the writers would get 50% of whatever.
Okay, that's interesting. Well, listen, I want to talk.
There's a lot.
We're getting an education. We're
it's
getting an education
today. I'm sure the
today.
People listening are like, we're not going
like
to call that. In. We're, this is too much.
Right.
This is over our heads. Next time we'll do something more creative.
Do you all manage, do you manage anybody? You know, I have a niece
no.
that sings in the D.C. area. She sings, you know, she's sung at Blues Alley in D.C. She's sung,
okay.
you know, different
what's
places.
What's her name?
Harmony. She goes
okay.
by Harmony.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. okay. No, we don't manage. We,
no, we don't. But no. we do have, we don't manage, but we do have certain people that we work with. Like, we have a 13-year-old, Aaliyah Kalin, who is awesome. She is just an incredible artist, and we've been working with her. But she's managed by her mom and her sister, you know what I mean? But, no, we don't manage, but we always, always love hearing new, talented, up-and-coming artists that can really sing.
Yeah, and
you know,
we'll
and
help
that's
develop.
Not using auto-tune. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll help develop or we'll write and produce something for them. But normally with management, management is a lot. And as mm-hmm. as artists ourselves, we know we understand artists, and we, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot to
mm-hmm.
manage an artist. And also we wouldn't want to do that because we're artists first, so of
mm-hmm.
course we would come first, and we don't
mm-hmm.
want to slight anyone.
No.
So we would
mm-hmm.
prefer to work with them and let them have outside
management.
But we would definitely work with them on a creative because we're going to give
and
it
also
all our.
Yeah, and if they're working to us, I mean, it just makes sense to, you know, we don't want anything to be a conflict of interest. I think
mm-hmm.
it's kind of unethical to manage someone as well as have them, you know, working through your label as far as production company. I
mm-hmm.
think it's, you know, it's too much,
mm-hmm.
you know. So it's best to have a separate manager from, you know, the company that you're working with to creatively
yes.
to get you the product.
Well, I'm going to let her hear this show. Can I? And I know she's going to want to connect with you all. Can I hook her up with you all just to, you know, get some?
Sure,
I'm sure
we'll have
absolutely,
mm-hmm. absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
But let's talk if we could for a moment just about because you all did an awesome rendition of the LaBelle song. What can I do? What can I do for you? How did that come about? Because everybody that I know that heard that song was blown away by that song. How did that project come?
Oh, from a phone call. We call it the back calls. Myself and China and Terry, we always would get on the phone and just. Oh my gosh, just talk for hours until she became a newlywed and now she has a new baby.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, there was no baby and no husband.
Mm-hmm.
But we would talk and we would sing on the phone. I mean, we would just go through our catalog and our brain and we stumbled upon What Can I Do For You? And
mm-hmm.
she was like, we should record this song. China said, we
mm-hmm.
should record this song.
Just
and we
a conversation,
okay.
you know?
Just a conversation. And
mm-hmm.
we love LaBelle. You know,
mm-hmm.
we have history, of course, with Miss Sarah
right.
Dash.
Sarah Dash, who we love.
Great girlfriend.
Yes.
And Miss Patti LaBelle, I go back with Miss Patti LaBelle as a kid because two of my neighbors was her musical director. So
okay.
I knew, you know, just coming up, you know, she's, I mean, Patti LaBelle came to one of my shows when I was a kid. We were singing at a little bar, and she came to see me, to motivate me, and got up on the floor, because it was no stage, and sung You Are My Friend to a bar full of, like, 50 people, and I shouldn't have been in there singing anyway. But just, you know what I mean? But you know what I mean? And so when you, that kind of love you get, you got to
mm-hmm.
give it back. So they cleared it because they own the song. They didn't have to clear that song for us to perform it.
And
they cleared
did.
It and said, girls, go have a good time with it and do us proud. And so
mm-hmm.
we're grateful and blessed that they let
mm-hmm.
us do. And we're going to actually be, we're coming back together because we haven't performed in some time because we've all been doing our separate projects, China doing her record, we're
mm-hmm.
doing ours. But we're going to come together June 18th at a place called Warm Daddy's
Warm
in Philadelphia
Daddy.
To perform the song in tribute to LaBelle for Black Music Month.
Yes.
So it's going to be fun.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's something. I mean, just three friends singing on the phone and saying, you know, we need
that's
to do
it.
This. And
that's
you got
it.
The blessings. And then
mm-hmm.
went out and do it. I know they were proud, too.
They were. Oh, my
yeah,
God.
They were.
Absolutely
yep.
loved it. And we came close
mm-hmm.
to a Grammy nomination. But we got, you know, we lost by a few points, but we came close. And we said, well, it wasn't the right time because, you know, if we had gotten the Grammy nomination right now, we wouldn't have our wonderful nephew, Little Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
So we would
mm-hmm.
take him over the Grammy nomination.
All right. So what else? You got anything else coming up that you want to make the listeners aware of? Any other projects that you're working on, or make the
family? Of course,
we're
working on our album right now. Yeah.
Okay.
We're working on our album, which is going
to be
a
project. Mm-hmm. And a project with one of our Italian partners. We're doing co-producing and writing his project as well. He's from Milan, so that project is moving right along.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we're working with several artists on that, including China on that one,
mm-hmm.
and several other artists. And
film and TV project.
Yeah, film and TV projects that we're working on. And we really just want people to come and stay in contact with us. Visit us on our website, and HelenandTerry.com, and it's Terry with a Y. And on Facebook, Helen Bruner and Terry Jones. And also on Twitter, we're Phil Erzy, P-H-I-L-E-R, Z as in zebra, Y as in yellow. So that's our handle on Twitter, and come and say hello. And on Instagram, we're Helen and Terry, you know, A-N-D-T-E-R-R-Y. You know, so.
And look out also for the Red Couch Conversations, Helen. We have to kind of plug that as well, which is something new that we're going to be doing, inviting some of our friends to our office on the Red Couch and interviewing and talking about music and political things. And it's going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
We're excited about it.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be wonderful. So we got a lot of things going on. When we finish the record, we like to come back on and promote it, and you can take a listen to it. And then we're going to start touring again. 2016, we're gonna tour and see everybody and see all of our fans and friends and family. So we're really, really looking forward to that.
Yes. And we have one more project that we're working on that we can't reveal, but when we do, we'd love to be able to come on to your show and kind of make the announcement. That would be awesome. But,
I would be honored
to speak to your fans. Yes.
All right. I would be honored. I would be absolutely honored. This has been a powerful educational show for me personally, and I'm sure for those out there, and I can't wait to get with my niece and share this information, this show with her. And, you know, I can send you a copy of the link, too, so you can have a copy of the show.
Please do.
For yourself.
And we'll share it.
I will.
We'll definitely share it. We always share. We put everything out there so people can know to tune in. There's people tuning in. So we love to share it. Absolutely. And thank you for having us.
Again, I want to, any parting words for our listeners, anything you'd like to let the listeners be aware of, any advice for, you know, people that are out there that are considering a career in the music industry, any words of wisdom? Besides the words of wisdom that you've imparted for the last hour, you've imparted a lot. But if there was anything that you'd like to leave with the listeners.
Well, you know what? Be original, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, be original. Don't be a follower. And if people tell you, you know, well, you need to do this, you need, no, go with your heart, because the soul speaks to the human. And people can feel when it's truth. So, and learn the industry. Before you start, learn. You would not go to a doctor that has not graduated at the top, from the top of his or her class. You don't want someone doing surgery on you that doesn't understand their craft. So think of yourself as a surgeon, and you want to learn how to operate properly.
Yes, and think of yourself as an entity as well. You know, make sure that you're registering your music, copywriting it, so you can protect your intellectual property, because the worst thing to do is to have something released and then you are not getting paid and you don't know why. Well, if you don't set up your business properly, then you'll never get paid and you'll be a disgruntled artist or musician or producer or songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? Somebody has decided that they want to talk to you. Okay. Get off the air. Okay, I'm going to give you the last, I'm going to say the last four digits of your phone number, and that way you know I'm talking about you. Okay, 4560. You're on the air with Terry Jones and Helen Bruner. Welcome to Juwanza for Life.
Hi, I'm so happy to be able to talk to you. This is Carmen calling in, and I just want to say that you women are so empowering. And I watch your videos. I posted them in a group that I have. And I want to know if you, did you write Beautiful, You Are?
Yeah.
Yes,
and
we did.
Did you guys write the video and were
the
those
treatment?
Actual couples?
The treatment was, was a collaboration with us and the director,
Rodney
Wittenberg. He's an Emmy-winning director, and we told him, listen, we want to do something with just love, and we believe in love, and he said, okay, he had the concept. And but Terry and I wrote that song, and I think it was the second song we wrote for the album.
Yep. And we wrote it, produced it, and mixed it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, were those actual couples?
No, they're all
no,
our
they
friends.
Weren't. All our friends. We put them together.
Yeah, we put them together, and they were all, they're our friends. We put them together. No one was really connected at all. And
okay.
And you know, I'll tell you a funny story. When we did the video release party, the gentleman, he's our good friend, who had the baby, and they came up to him, some of our fans, and said, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry that your wife died, but the wife was sitting right next to him. And it was just, you know, but I'm glad that Rodney did a great job at directing it because people really thought they were true couples, but they're all of our friends, and they came together for us just to do that. And they did a good acting job, I must say. So thank you.
It was so
good to hear.
It was believable. I really enjoyed it. When are you guys coming to the D.C. area?
You know what? As soon as we finish this album, we're coming.
Mm-hmm.
We believe we're looking at Blues Alley to come there.
Okay.
And Carmen, I'm telling you, if you're on our email list or you follow us on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram,
you'll know.
We're going to put the whole schedule out, and we're going to let everybody know. So it'll probably be more so around 2016.
Okay, that sounds good,
okay.
And I'm sure that Joanne.
And you make sure you come up
know.
To us, you come up to us, and you say something,
right.
So we know. We'll put you up on stage, and you can join.
Absolutely.
Oh wow, that's so cool.
Can you
thank
sing,
you
Queen Connor?
We like doing that.
No. No.
Okay. We'll let you sit, and we'll just watch.
Okay.
Okay.
I can do satire. That's about it.
Okay.
Thank you so much. You guys
thank
are wonderful.
You,
all right.
I
thank you.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank so you. Much for bye-bye. Calling in, Queen Carmen. Appreciate you. Oh, wow. Thank you so much, everybody. This has been a powerful show. I've really
enjoyed
this. And, again, I'm going to have you back as soon as possible. You don't even have to have a project. You don't even have to have anything going on to come back on. Okay, you can just come back on and share some more. That's very, very powerful.
Because, you know, we can all talk for about 2 hours. We can keep it going, right?
But thank you so much
have you back
again, and we will. We will do it again, okay?
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time, everybody. That was Helen and Terry. You know, we're on first name basis, y'all.
Hello.
Okay,
yes,
those,
we
you
are.
Know.
Yes, we are.
Right?
You've
so we're
going
to have them back as soon as possible. And again, you know what? The next time we come back, we're going to have to talk about the Grammy, the whole Grammy organization and the work that you're doing with and all of that. We'll, you know, again, this has been an awesome
interview.
And
one other thing,
everybody.
We may have to give you a note.
Okay.
We may have to give you a note, and we all do a little harmony on the phone because we got to hear what you got.
Oh, okay. Hey, don't get me started.
Okay.
Man. You know how we can get
there.
Right?
All right.
That was
okay.
Awesome.
I won't stop.
Got it. All right.
I won't stop. All right. Well, thank you again for your time. It's,
all right.
It's been
my
pleasure.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes. Yes.
I appreciate
thoroughly
it.
Thoroughly enjoyed
so
it.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Oh, you got it.
Okay.
Bye, everybody. Bye,
everybody. Bye-bye.
Peace. Everybody, that was Terry Jones and Helen, I mean, that was just a very, very powerful, Helen Bruner, that was just a powerful, powerful interview, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Queen Carmen, thank you so much for calling in. What a surprise. You just added to the joy that we were all experiencing. As you could tell, we were having a ball up in here. I appreciate you, all of the listeners. Again, as I always said, and I said at the top of the hour, you could be doing something else. Aren't you glad you tuned in? I'm glad you tuned in. My name is Jawanza. This is Jawanza for Life. I love you too. Peace.
Take me up higher. Reach for the top. Higher and higher. Don't ever fall stop. Take me up higher. Reach for the top.
Oh, yeah.
Higher and higher.
Mm-hmm.